What is up, everyone? Welcome to another episode of the Everyday Parent Podcast. Kelly, are you gonna cough over there?
No, I was about to laugh.
Oh, you're about to laugh. So as you heard, Kelly's here, but we got rid of the old man. Shane.
Uncle Shane is He's on gone. Vacation.
He is on a well-deserved rest.
Absolutely.
A sabbatical.
Wait, how long has he been here? Is it 18?
15.
15 years.
15. I had to go back and listen because I was trying to make sure I had the order of episodes right.
Feels like 35.
And, it was 15.
Shane, we miss you.
I actually support Shane so much when he's here. Now that he's gone, I'm suddenly making fun of him.
Well, Shane is an icon. We love
him. And that voice you hear is none other than Jeff Borton, our family ministry pastor, and the guy that hasn't spoken yet, the one that has made multiple appearances on this show by phone call, is none other than Adam Strobe.
In person today.
In person today. You've made one in-person appearance, but I think you've made two via phone call.
Yeah, I'm like the lone correspondent out in the field.
Strobe, what hacks have you used on your children recently?
Oh goodness! I mean, we're headlong into the fall, so it's busy. I mean, right now, the bedtime, trying to convince my kids like when they should go to bed. It's like, you know, so you're just making up things. Like if you don't go to sleep, like it'll stunt your growth. Mm. You know.
Wait, is that actually not true? Because I think I still believe that.
I mean,
that's a lie.
I mean, you're,
there's got to be something.
Your body needs like to refuel and
your body needs rest to like, but like, I mean, if you just don't sleep, like, are you
going to
forever be like 4'2"? Probably not, but you know.
I read a thing yesterday that said in middle school, the middle school years around those age ranges, you need more sleep than ever. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, I think there's some legitimacy there is like, if you're going to develop well.
I wonder if the sleep in middle school has less to do with development and more to do with stress management, because middle school is probably the worst phase of life. I don't know about you guys,
it can
but like
be
the
very
emotional
well
like unwinding yeah, that is just, happening.
I mean, it's stress management for everybody. Like sometimes my kids don't go to bed for them; they go to bed for me. Like I need to get some things done. You have to go to sleep so I can do that.
Speaking of stunting your growth, do y'all tell your kids that coffee or caffeine will stunt their growth? Because I got told that all the time, and obviously that didn't work.
This is so stressful for me because my 2-year-old is drinking coffee.
Kelly, a 2-year-old.
Oh, and no, this you're is leading really, a parent podcast.
This is really bad.
Decaf, fully loaded?
Okay, listen, I don't know what to do. Okay, this is like so real.
What? I need to know how this started, though.
Okay, so usually when my other two kids had ever asked, like, oh, I want to have coffee, like, I'd be like, oh, like, no, this is for grown-ups only. And, like, I would give them a sip, and they would hate it immediately. So they never wanted it again. Nora one day asked for it, and I was like, no, you're not going to like it. It's only for grown-ups. Took a sip, loved it. Girlfriend drank straight up hot black coffee, nothing in it. The other day, pulled up a chair, went over to the counter, got her sister to pour her black coffee in a cup. I come out. My 2-year-old is drinking straight black coffee.
Oh my gosh.
And I'm like, what is happening?
Is she also reading the newspaper?
No, but I don't know what to do.
In the stock
and
market.
She goes, Mommy, I want my coffee. It's so alarming. And I don't know what to do.
You have truly created a monster.
I'm really worried. When they say like, oh, the third child, like, or the baby of the family gets whatever they want, I've always like, how does that happen? And now I'm living it.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know what I'm doing.
Are we not going to talk about the fact that someone in your house is drinking plain black coffee?
Right? And it's not me or okay. Mark. What? It's a baby who's now taking over.
Wait, are you suggesting that plain black coffee is weird to drink?
No, as I just
I know very few people that do it with all of today's varieties. Oh, so I'm not saying it's weird. I just don't know anybody.
You would assume.
Unless you're 60 plus, probably.
You would assume a 2-year-old is drinking something very sugary.
Right.
Yeah. And, or yeah. Like flavored.
Yeah, no.
Has she
ever had it in a bottle?
No. No.
What about a sippy cup it's with just, a lid?
It's just a little tiny children's mug, which makes it even more comical because I went on a mission trip and I brought back these little tiny mugs. So they're like the perfect size. It's so weird.
So anyways, 2-year-olds getting a caffeine dependence already.
Well, I've heard my whole life that if you drank coffee, I think I believed it till I was probably 18. If you have a lot of caffeine, you're not going to grow. I heard that too.
Yeah, it's just I've never I got told that and then just kept growing and growing. And I was like, this must be a lie.
Oh, really? Because, you drank coffee?
Yeah.
Because you're tall.
Yeah. So, like, my grandmother, so it was coffee that then started to turn into, like, coffee. So she would, like, she'd put a very minuscule amount, maybe a 20% of a cup full of black coffee. The rest was milk and evaporated milk or sweetened condensed milk. So it was just incredibly sweet.
Baby Cuban.
Yeah. And so I was like, oh, this coffee's great. And then as I've gotten older, it's turned into more and more. And then, you know, you get to college and I'm not proud of this, but I texted my mom because I needed more money for coffee. And I said, it's coffee or Adderall, your choice. And
threats. Grandma got me hooked.
You had to hit her up for so coffee money? Ya.
Bro, the way I handled my finances in college was awful. I like look back and I'm like, Lyndon was so much smarter than me because, you know, she actually saved money through college. I did not. I very much, FOMO was real. I spent money on coffee and food way more than I should have. And my parents, if they listen to this, are going to be hitting something because they're like, we told you. We tried to sit down and tell you multiple times throughout college. You never listened and now you regret it. And they would be right.
I mean, you can get a can of Folgers pretty cheap, though.
Yeah, or some soup.
Yeah, there's... Oh, listen.
We weren't drinking Maxwell House, were we?
No.
Okay.
No, I was, you know...
fancy coffee.
When you go to a college like Union, I was just... Everyone that I was with was in a different tax bracket than me. So, you know, their parents just had more money to give. My parents did not. So that's why I left Union. But Union's a great school. I genuinely would recommend it. It's not a hot take.
Here's the hot take from Alex.
It's not.
Who are we going to polarize today?
Only if you
today?
Like coffee or have extra walking around coffee money in your pocket can you go to Union, apparently.
I mean, no. Anyways. No,
let's not.
All that to say, I learned to drink black coffee very quickly because it was the cheapest. So I am the 60-year-old in the room, and Shane would agree. So there you go, Shane. But
fun fact, Shane does not like coffee.
He actually hates it. The only kind of coffee he'll drink is Miss Carrie's Cuban.
Yeah.
Which when we went on a mission trip, we went to a Cuban like community and like a restaurant and they made authentic Cuban coffee and Miss Carrie was not too far off on how she makes it. So shout out to Miss Carrie.
She does a good job.
But anyways, today we are talking about family ministry and what that means, what it looks like, all the things. And it can mean a lot of things because I was actually just visiting another church for different reasons and they had a big thing that said family ministry. It's like, oh, what does that mean here? And the person I was talking to was just like, I don't know. I think it's just students and kids. And I was like, well, and it wasn't their field, family ministry there. But I know for us, it means a whole lot more than that. So Jeff, as our family ministry pastor, how would you explain to all of our listeners what family ministry means both inwardly and outwardly for us at Long Hollow?
Yeah, great question. I think to answer that one, you kind of got to start with how we got here. We would say that I got away from the microphone, and so that's the awkwardness here. I would say, man, to answer that, we kind of got to start with like, how do we land on something like family ministry? Because you're right. When you think about family ministry, if there's 10 churches and you ask 10 churches about family ministry, you're going to get a different answer for everyone. So for us, it was learning to decide what that means at Long Hollow. And ultimately, what is the desire that God birthed in us to see families become the primary disciple maker in their home? So as we were looking at, I mean, Long Hollow has had an incredible history of students and kids ministry and so many cool things, so many great stories of salvation. And so there wasn't a problem with any of that. All that's been awesome. What we realized is that we only included parents to the extent, pretty much, and this is very generalized, but hey, if you want to serve, we got an opportunity for you, or we send out an email and that was kind of how we were approaching parents. And what we realized was we think that we could approach the family differently and help parents understand what it means to be the primary disciple maker in their home. And so what we realized was we were taking this approach, which most churches do. I've been in student ministry for over 20 years, and this is the approach I've had. It's kind of like, hey, if you'll bring your student or your kid to church, we'll teach them, we'll disciple them, and then you can take them back home. And what we didn't think through was that we were inadvertently like undercutting the legs out from the parents and saying, hey, you don't have this responsibility. Let us handle this for you. We never said that, never even thought it. But in the way that we program, thinking, man, we can do all this and we're not going to resource you as a parent to do it. You know, the idea was we got it. So the Lord kind of put in us, like, and I say us, I mean our leadership as a whole, this idea that how do we minister to parents? How do we help develop parents in a way that they see their role as a primary disciple maker? And so we haven't been at it a terribly long time, and so we're still learning as we go. But what we know is that we really see family ministry as a partnership between the church and the home, right? Like, we want to see families that disciple their kids for a legacy of faith in Jesus Christ. And so really, if you had to summarize, that's what we would say is we think the church and the home can partner together for us to help equip parents to be able to do what God has called them to do. And so a lot of that's awareness. A lot of parents don't realize it, and that's okay. Unless you've heard it, how would you know? And so this is our approach and our programming. Now, to that extent, too, we'd also say we want to help develop parents and families, but we also want to keep reaching kids who are far from God, and we're going to love and disciple students whose parents don't come to church. And so there's a whole dynamic there. But in short, we want to help see parents thrive at home spiritually and to help their kids to do that. One of the jokes that we made was like the Home Depot saying is like, you can do it and we can help. And if I had to summarize everything, it'd be like, parents, we believe in you. We think, we know that God has called you, and we think that you can be a great disciple maker right where you are. What do you guys think?
I mean, yeah, biblically speaking, when I think about Deuteronomy 6, when Moses is kind of laying out the framework for discipleship, mm-hmm. he's speaking to the entire faith community. So in the audience are parents, grandparents, aunts, uncles, friends. And so, yes, biblically speaking, we see that the primary responsibility does lay on the parent, but it doesn't negate the fact of the church community to come alongside and to partner. And it's like the ancient proverb of like, hey, it takes a village to raise a child. For sure. If you are a parent, you very quickly realize that parenting in isolation is not only lonely, but it's incredibly difficult. And so when you have the partnership of both your church family and then also just your actual community, whether that's your literal family or the friends and the people that you surround yourself with, I mean, there is so much joy and just encouragement found in parenting with people alongside of you. One thing that I think is important to point out is Shane and I were prepping to teach a parenting class that he then bailed on me for. Thanks, Shane.
Hello, vacation.
I know. But one thing that was so kind of startling is that only 29% of born-again Christian parents say that their faith is the primary factor in how they parent. And so when I was talking to parents last night in our parenting class, I said, be willing to be the weird parent, because even amongst your church community, you are the minority.
Absolutely.
Like, less than a third of us are saying, hey, our relationship with the Lord is what is driving how I parent or how I discipline or how I engage with my kids. And so on one hand, I'm kind of like, man, like, that's not great. But on the other hand, it's helpful, I think, when we're armed with that kind of information and we can say, I'm willing to do the hard work of honoring God in my parenting practices, even when it feels very much like I'm going against the grain, not only just in culture and like in the world, but possibly even in my own like life group or in my church context. Like, I may be the weird parent, so to speak, not like actually weird, but the unique parent that's truly pursuing parenting in a way that's God-honoring.
I think that is, I think that's the difference maker between, I know pretty much everybody's stories here, and so some of us have some of the same story. I grew up in a Christian home, and no shade to my own parents, but very comfortable going to church, very comfortable talking about the idea of God, not God as an idea, but talking about God. But really being very comfortable with church and growing up very morally, you know, and almost to the point where, because I was following all the rules, that felt like I was a good Christian. And so here's what I'm saying is, when instead of your routine or your comfortability leading the way in how you parent, if your faith is the primary component in how you parent your kids, it will show up in how they approach their own spirituality.
Oh, absolutely. Right?
So we look at it from that perspective. Like, there's a lot of really good church-going religious kids, and yet we see, I don't put a ton of stock in this percentage, but the latest one shows that about 67% of kids, and this statistic is a few years old, so could be different now, but about 67% of kids step out of high school and step away from the church. Not necessarily their faith. They don't necessarily become raging heathens, but they have to take time to evaluate, you know, like, what do I really believe? And I believe a big part of that is the comfortability of being around church, being comfortable with routine, but not really understanding why they believe what they believe. And so the parents' involvement in discipleship and helping to have those spiritual conversations, literally, look at Deuteronomy 6, and what does it say? You mentioned it as, man, when you're laying down and when you're walking along the road and we're doing these things to pass on the faith. So we're having spiritual conversations about what God is teaching me. And kids, here's why I'm making this decision, because I feel like the Lord is leading this way. And here's the spiritual conviction behind that. Those little nuances, along with some other factors, obviously, make a huge difference in either raising, hey, we're just good moral kids, or, man, we are passionate to follow Jesus.
Well, and I think it's easy to parent with either like assumptions, or let's be honest, parenting is hard.
It's hard.
And there's sometimes where instead of taking the time to explain the conviction of the Lord, can we do this? No, why not? We don't do that. And we miss out on the teaching moment, the teaching opportunity to be like, because of the conviction of the Lord, because of his word, because of this. Instead, it's just like, because I said so, and let's move on, you know, because we're late or all these other things. So like, we just miss out on opportunities. I don't even think it's like consciously, it's just like, we're in a hurry, but I missed a moment to like lay out some biblical truth because, you know, we have to get to school.
I mean, I think that's so accurate though. It's like, I always think about discipleship and in the family unit happening in those moments, not so much as we're going to have a sit down 30-minute Bible study every night. That's great if your family does that. For sure. I know very few actual families that do that really, really well or achievable, or like checking them it's a great, beautiful time. It's like, no, it's chaos and it's a nightmare to try to get everybody on the same page. But I think about those moments, like I told a story the other day of I was getting ready to teach his parenting class. I grew up in a home where my dad yelled a lot. He was a great guy, but just yelled a lot. And again, why I thought I was Italian, this giant temper. So I yelled at my kids the night before I'm going to teach this parenting class. And then I was like so convicted. I was like, of course I'm going to yell at my children the day before. Like, what kind of parent am I? I'm trash. I shouldn't be teaching this class. And I was like, no, this is the enemy trying to get me down. But I had to go to my children and I had to ask them to forgive me. And I had to model what repentance and forgiveness looks like. And I could have just confessed that to the Lord and been like, God, I'm so sorry. Like, please, like, help me to like manage this. And that would have been good. But going back to my kids and letting them see that, like, there was a discipleship moment there where I had to ask my kids to forgive me and I had to model what this messiness of following Christ looks like. And I think sometimes as parents, whether it's due to like just simply being rushed or sometimes maybe even feeling like I can't let my kids see me in a moment of weakness or vulnerability, like I have to have it all together, I'm the parent, we sometimes negate these opportunities to show our kids the messiness of following Jesus. And I think so much of faith is caught and not just taught. And like,
huge.
Our kids are gonna mimic what we model. So when our kids, if they see us as coming to church on Sunday and worshiping Jesus on a Sunday or a Wednesday, if that's the extent of our faith that our kids see, then they will grow up thinking that Jesus is just something that I do on Sunday. He is not the be-all, end-all creator of everything and, like, you know, the one that I am worshiping, the one that I am basing all of my decisions off of. It's just a, quote, thing I do once or twice a week.
And I wonder, Jeff, that statistic you threw out, like, when kids go off to college and have like full, you can't see my air quotes, authority over their own life. Like, you don't have mom or dad, like, poking you awake on a Sunday morning and it's like, it's time for church. Mm-hmm. Like, you have that full thing where they've just, we go to church because mom says we go to church, or because dad says we go to church, not because I have like a personal conviction that that's important to me.
Well, and I think the parents that I see doing family ministry, family discipleship the best, and when I say the best, I mean when you see the fruit of their labor and their children, it's those that when you meet them just as people, whether they're a parent or not, you're like, oh, the overflow of your walk with the Lord is so transparent, because we can't go 5 seconds without something about the gospel coming up or something about your relationship with Jesus coming up. And it almost sounds like what you guys are talking about is that, like, to be effective in this is to just operate from, like, the overflow of your time with the Lord, not let's set up all of these different things. Like, I'm just, if you are doing everything you can to pursue the Lord, your kids will naturally see that, because the natural spiritual disciplines are going to come out of that as well.
I think, yes, 1,000% that it is, if you read Deuteronomy 6, it starts with us. Like, I cannot pass on a faith to my children that I first do not possess.
100%.
I also want to be really clear that you can be a Christian parent and you can love the Lord and you can, quote, do everything right as a Christian parent. And 100%. You can still have children that'll walk away from the faith. So I want us to always be mindful and have so much grace for parents and families who have done everything, have raised their kids to know and love Jesus, have walked closely with the Lord. Like, everybody also has their own free will to make their own decisions. So I want us to have grace and acknowledgement that there's no such thing as a perfect parent or a perfect kid.
No,
like,
no.
There's so many variables. Mm. But yes, and also the work of the Holy Spirit, the work of Scripture in our kids' lives. Like,
no doubt.
We can still have kids that are what I call, like, spiritual orphans, like those kids that don't grow up in church or in Christian homes, that will still come to know the Lord. Like, I am one of those kids. So there's the both and. But yeah, I think the way that God designed it, like, ideally, is that parents would pass on faithfulness to kids and that it would be modeled from one generation to the next. Like, if you look throughout Scripture, how often does God tell his people, remember my faithfulness? Like, we're so fickle and so quick to forget God's promises in our life. And so just like we have to be reminded of his goodness, we then have to pass it on to our kids.
And so, you know, if we're talking about this whole idea of what is family ministry and why, this is our why. Because all four of us sitting in this room will tell you we're the first ones that do not have it together. We're talking about this, we live this every day, and we still fall short, right? And so this is the encouragement from a long haul perspective in why family ministry, because we believe we can create a community where we build each other up and help encourage each other and equip and resource to say, listen, if this is something that you want to live out, we're gonna help do our best together, right? And so perfection has never been part of the conversation. There isn't a perfect parent. We don't even have all the answers. There's so many things that we want to learn and figure out, but we're started on this journey and we're committed to the people of Long Hollow to walk together the best that we can to help us live in a sort of biblical community where we believe in discipling our kids and raising them up to be kids who love Jesus and understand what it means to be a disciple maker. So, you know, we've kind of talked about a brief glimpse of what does it look like to live like this. I would say, kind of as a recap, it takes encouragement to do that together. So Long Hollow is, we're offering different things. Like, I mean, this podcast, if you're listening to this podcast, praise God, right? But this is a small piece to hopefully just encourage you and prick your thinking. You know, we hope that if you don't think this way, you're thinking, I haven't considered that. Maybe I should. Or if you do think this way, you're encouraged, like, oh, good, I'm not alone. Nobody gets it right all the time, and there's not an expectation to. But there's other resources, other things that we can talk about another time that could help you, if you desire to start walking this road, to help you in your journey. And we'd love to have a conversation. So if we're talking why family ministry, this is why. We believe in you. We believe what God can do through you as a parent, and we want to walk with you.
Yeah, and if you're like, oh, what other resources do you have there, Jeff? Well, you can head to longhollow.com/parent, and you can find a page full of resources divided up by the age of life that your kids are in, your kid or kids are in. And so you can get that by going to longhollow.com/parent. And you can also join this conversation and help us understand what resources you need as a parent out there trying to figure it out by texting the word parent to 98173. That's P-A-R-E-N-T to 98173. Every time I say parent, I have to think, make sure I spell it right, because if I spell it wrong, it's going to be terrible. And so with that, thank you guys for listening. Strobe, Jeff, Kelly, do y'all have anything else that you want to share before we wrap up?
Oh, thanks for listening. If you made it this far, God bless you.
So anyways, guys, thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you guys next week. See ya.